Welcome to another recording of Storage Unpacked. This is the second of two recordings made at IP Expo 2018 in London. This episode has conversations with Scale Computing, StoreMagic, Nasuni, and Nephos. These were live recordings and so there is some background noise. As usual, you can find the show notes online at storageunpacked.com and follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked.
Hey, we're at IP Expo recording another Storage Unpacked. I'm here with Chris Evans, and we have Ard from Scale Computing sitting with us at the moment. Hi Ard, how are you?
Very good.
Yeah. So, you're from Scale. Can you tell us a little bit about what Scale Computing is and what the company product is and why you're here?
Yeah, so Scale is a vendor that creates software, and we sell our software in the form of an appliance. It's a hyper-converged solution. But it combines hyperconverged as a technology with virtualization, with data protection and data replication. So basically everything you need for a small data center is delivered in a very neat, simple to use, simple to manage package.
So when you talk about virtualization, are we a VMware virtualization or are we something different?
You knew the answer to that.
He's leading the witness.
We have our virtualization platform is based on KVM, but it's basically a component that is under the hood of the solution. Yeah. So the way it's presented is through our interface, and that's made very simple. So yes, it's KVM based. And by the way, the biggest companies in the world are using KVM for their solution, but it's not VMware, it's not Microsoft Hyper-V.
Yeah. So how much customization are you doing in the KVM space? How involved are you with the KVM community? I'm always interested when people talk about building their products on open source, about what they're giving back.
Yeah, so it's very difficult for me to tell you what we give back, because that's more the engineering team, and that's not really my area. What I know is that the culture within Scale is very much to contribute back through engineering, through all the people that are engaging on all levels. So I expect that's okay, although I don't know exactly what it is we bring back.
I'm fairly certain, although again, I don't work for the company, so I can't tell you, but I'm fairly certain that you have worked with the community and you do stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell off the top of my head what that was, but I know that there is that work going on, definitely. And you know, it's worth taking that one off and having that discussion separately.
Yeah.
So Scale's been around for how long now?
Yeah, the company's founded in 2007, 2008. But with the latest product, which was basically offered in 2011, 2012. That was the hyper-converged solution as we know it today.
So you've been I think in many ways you were on the forefront of hyper-converged computing in the early days.
Company first, weren't you?
Yeah.
But then you sort of pivoted into the hyper-converged space.
That's correct, yeah. So we stopped that development and moved to this space. Actually, the product is announced at that time on one of the VMworlds as a competing product. Yeah.
So, who are your customers? Where do you see yourself playing? Are you playing in the enterprise, the SME, SMB space?
So actually, we're more and more playing in all spaces. If you look at the typical SMB, mid-market, that whole discussion about how big that is in the US and how big that is here in EMEA. Typically, SMB and mid-market is all business in EMEA.
So,
from a size perspective.
It's interesting. So you're here in Europe. Were you a European company or is it an American company?
American company. Yeah. We're based in Indianapolis with engineering and the product team in San Francisco. And then we have a UK presence and a Dutch presence. So you can hear my accent.
Yeah. Normally we talk to the cowboy guy, but I don't think he's here this time around. Jason,
yeah, he's not here, let's say, this week. No.
Oh, that's a pity. We like.
He's fun.
He's where he is in Texas.
Yeah. I called him by his first name. Nobody ever uses his first name.
It's always Collier. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's doing well, and we'll see him soon. But the so the SMB market, mid-market, that was, let's say, the background of the company. The company was founded by people that came out of that space and wanted to build something that was functionality-wise ready for any enterprise, and at the same time made it very simple. So a lot of emphasis on functionality, but more emphasis on making it simple.
Yeah.
So automatically that plays into many spaces, and these days in way more spaces, like a distributed enterprise or what we typically call edge computing these days, which is a new term for actually the same. But how can you put the right resources at more locations where there is more and more need for performance, for virtualization platform, for redundancy. So the more clusters you can bring to more places, running more virtual machines, running more applications, new applications, we see that happening more and more. So SMB, mid-market, distributed enterprise, edge computing. I can give you a very nice example of a customer that we have been selling to in the last couple of months. We're actually rolling it out right now. It's a retail company in Belgium. Mm-hmm. They have chosen Scale after a competitive bid from basically every player in the hyperconverged space. They were coming from quite a legacy environment, typically not virtualized, many different solutions from many different software and hardware providers, not always as secure as it should be. They wanted to move and take a big step to the latest technology, and therefore looked at hyperconvergence as a solution. At the end, there were two companies. One of them was Scale, and they selected Scale for the fact that our software platform is built for that environment, but it's built in a way that is very efficient from a resources point of view. If you compare it to others, they are using what they call a virtual storage appliance, which is taking quite a big number of resources out of the nodes to make the solution run. We don't have that overhead. So our software is very lean and mean. So that means that we can go lower in terms of hardware specs to run the cluster. If you do that, you can choose more price competitive nodes, and therefore your total solution will be way more affordable.
Yeah.
And very much needed in the edge space.
Yeah. So I'm gonna step in and make a disclaimer here. I have one of your clusters.
I know.
And it's great. I better admit to it. And it's great because it just works. But it actually is a really lightweight one. It's one of the earlier ones. So it's only 3 1U servers. It's only got some standard disks in. There's no flash in it whatsoever. But as a test dev environment for VM, for virtual machines, it's fantastic. That, I guess, is what you're talking about here. You're talking about that ability where a company might have, say, 100 branches, and they just want to put something in that can deploy in each of those branches, very lightweight, very simple, very low cost, because they're scaling out many, many deployments of it. So something like your solution is more appropriate because it's cheaper and more efficient. That's what you're saying.
Correct, but also the fact that it's a cluster, and it's redundant.
So you get resiliency and everything else anyway.
Yeah,
yes.
People can go down in footprint, but only with a single node and let's say no
fair
availability.
Point.
Yeah,
and they can of course have another server next to it and replicate, etc. But the simplicity of our solution at that price point that no one in this space can match is helping us a lot. So we're getting into more spaces, more enterprise organizations, where they love the let's say the content of the software stack and the size of the software stack. Also the fact that we can go to single nodes. So of course we sell clusters all the time, but going to a single node with the same functionality without the cluster functionality is, let's say, getting us beyond the edge, if you will, to the edges of the edge.
Yeah.
but the replication functionality will offer that availability within the whole ecosystem. So for edge computing, for remote locations, for many remote locations, that's one of the reasons, is that the feedback of those customers, this specific customer, led to a new development in terms of how to manage the clustered environment. Yeah, so in the old days, we were managing a number of clusters. Now we'll talk about many more clusters. So that management interface will evolve over time to have multiple locations, multiple clusters, and become a much bigger umbrella type management system than the cluster or a number of clusters.
So, so you provide a centralized command and control infrastructure for, so say a retail company who has thousands of offices, but their IT department's in their center, they can still, they can manage it easily.
Correct. Yeah.
That was our timer.
And
so unfortunately, we're out of time.
We could have talked. I could talk for hours.
You could, absolutely. Yeah. So I think we should do it again. But for today, unfortunately, that is our time.
So where can we find, where can people find you on the internet, or where can they find Scale Computing? Or do you do social media?
Yeah, we, we're basically present on all social media. So LinkedIn, of course. If you want to know a little bit more about the background of the company, you can go to Facebook. We're on Instagram. We have a nice website explaining what we do. And so, yeah, very...
Scalecomputing.com?
Correct.
Because you didn't actually say that, so I thought I better just say it for you.
Okay.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, great. Good to meet you. Thanks for the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, this is Chris and Martin recording another Storage Impact podcast. We're still at IP Expo, this time with John from Store Magic. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you? Good. Good, good to be here, Chris.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us who you are, what you do for the company?
Sure. So, John Glendenning. I head up sales and business development for Store Magic. And at IPX, we're here talking to the visitors about delivering a simple, affordable, hyper-converged infrastructure at the edge.
And that's what your company does.
Exactly.
There we go. Software-based?
Software-based. We have a virtual SAN. It's a storage appliance. It gets installed inside a virtual machine on top of either vSphere or Hyper-V.
Okay. I guess from the accent that you're English.
I am.
And the company's English.
It is English, and I find it interesting. You say English. How refreshing.
Yes.
Sorry, my Scottish and Welsh friends.
I'm from England, so I say
that's right, that's absolutely. Right. And we're English and, and British as well.
Absolutely.
You know, there is a Welsh storage company. They're very proudly Welsh.
There is a Welsh storage company.
So we've won time, right? So they, we have a proudly English storage company.
Why not? And though we have good Welsh heritage, we are just over the water from Wales in Bristol, headquartered there. We were set up by, you know, actually an engineering team that were one of the pioneers in network storage. I mean, the core team headed by Chris Ferry, our CTO, pioneered in that area. And the product basically developed from there. SVSAN is leverages iSCSI network storage to deliver this very simple storage environment for hyperconverged infrastructure.
Okay, so you talk about hyperconverged, but actually before we started recording, you actually talked about edge as well.
Yeah.
And we can tick that buzzword off as being one of the list of different things that we have to talk about. We should talk about cloud as well, shouldn't we?
We should.
And we should ask whether you've got, let's look around, IoT or blockchain in your product. But, but being serious, you know, you are actually quite good as an edge solution. In fact, I would say that's probably one of the things you major on.
It is. It is the thing we tend to lead with. You know, by edge, we mean, you know, remote and branch office. We mean retail stores. We mean manufacturing. Yeah, we mean application types, traditional back office applications, but sensor data applications. And what's exciting for us is, you know, before it was called edge, there wasn't as much data generated at the edge as there is now. And more data is being generated at the edge. And more importantly, that data needs to be pre-processed. It's becoming very valuable. And those customers are looking for highly available infrastructure, which we can deliver.
And I guess tied to that, it's not just highly available, but you want something that is relatively easy to deploy. Because
correct.
I remember talking to, I think it might have been Hans, is he still CEO?
He is.
I should think I would know that.
He's still our great leader.
One of our PR people to tell me that. But they're not here at the moment. They've all left. So. But Hans has mentioned one example, and that was wind farms.
Yeah.
And you had equipment in wind
That's
farms.
Right.
And clearly, not everybody is going to be able to send engineers out for a wind farm to manage that equipment. So
right.
Clearly, simplicity must be part of the problem.
Absolutely. And servicing sites that are in remote, harsh locations is not only tough, it can be very expensive. And worse than that, it can take a long time to get to them, to service them. So, yeah, wind farms, and that customer is E.ON, the German energy company, and we're deployed for wind farms in both Germany and the U.S., you know, to deliver highly available infrastructure for, you know, the sensor data that's collected there, which is a key part of the solution.
Yeah, so it's a distributed environment, so obviously you're doing stuff out on the edge. So I'm interested in how that gets command and control from the center, how you get data back from the edge.
Right.
Because you're talking about retail stores, it's great, they collect a lot of data, in pre-processing, but they do want it to come back. So if you're a big supermarket or something, if you put your appliances there.
Sure.
So how do you integrate across a distributed enterprise?
Yeah, no, great question. We're very focused on storage. So our thing is delivering, you know, a storage layer that is highly available and delivers the right level of performance in a footprint which is very small. That's what we know. It's what we're good at. Okay. What we don't do is then focus on the next layer, which is the replication. So this will be third-party partners or specific solutions delivered by those organizations to do the replication and actually take that data and do deeper analysis. So with someone like E.ON, there's a certain amount of analysis being done real time at the edge, and then they'll be replicating that data back for more deeper batch-based analytics back at the data center. Another one is Cisco SecureOps. Again, one of our references do exactly the same thing for intrusion detection at industrial plants, and it's another example of that. And they've layered in the replication piece on top of our storage.
So you have a big partner ecosphere, or
we do. We do. We're not a huge organization, so partnership is important to us. We have a global agreement with Cisco. You're able to consume Cisco UCS servers with StoreMagic globally. We have a similar agreement in place with Lenovo. And then we have our own partner network of channel partners, resellers, and service providers that use our storage. And you mentioned cloud earlier. We think of cloud about enabling cloud providers. We're important plumbing. We have, you know, many service providers around the world that use our software on a pay-as-you-go basis to deliver often dedicated hosting for private cloud requirements. So we're part of that cloud story, but again, it's very much around that storage and delivering a simple, lightweight, cost-effective solution.
Okay. So let's go back and talk about, you know, the deployment model. I could take this and download it myself and try it out.
Yep.
Could I, for example, or, you know, what, how could people, like, you know, try it out and see what they think?
Go to our website, download it. I think your typical IT pro could have a system up and running within the hour. You know, we pride ourselves on making the complex simple.
Okay.
A little buzz one for you.
That sounds fair, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Take that one off the list.
Thank you. Yeah. Another one for you. No worries, Chris. So we pride ourselves on that. And the product is very easy to deploy. It's got a simple installer. We're creating a storage appliance in a VM on top of vSphere or Hyper-V. And within minutes, you will have your shared storage available. Some additional configuration, you've got a simple hyper-converged cluster right there running and available to you.
Have you ever thought of not being tied to the hypervisor? So imagine as we go forward where, for example, we can do things with containers, or we can do serverless, where we're now seeing Amazon shipping appliances that can run Lambda and other things. Have you ever thought of stepping outside of the hyper-converged sort of support side?
So funny enough, as an edge case, but edge for a different reason.
Yeah.
As an edge case.
Absolutely, and I think it is. I think that's the reason.
We do have some customers that use our storage appliance, actually bare metal, for storage-only deployments. They've got a particular performance requirement. That's more the exception than the rule. From a container perspective, we're looking at that market very closely. We believe that it's a nascent market. It's young, it's happening, but it's still nascent.
Yeah.
And a lot of the experts in the industry believe that containers are going to require persistent storage just like the current application architecture requires today.
Of course they do, and why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, out of the box, many containerized apps are going to deploy within VMs anyway. They're going to be in mixed environments. They're going to be using the same iSCSI shared storage you deploy today. I have no doubt that we'll support native containers at some point in the future for that reason.
I just think that edge slash IoT slash And no, John, you cannot steal the ice cream that's been brought for us by Rebecca. That's a, and sadly, we haven't got a picture of that. But we, anybody who's listening to us will just have to imagine.
I should have just taken a bite.
How yummy and lovely that ice cream looks now. But getting back to the idea of things like serverless and triggering functions off data being created, it may be that maybe your solution isn't targeted at that model where, you know, somebody's created data on a camera or other type of device. Maybe you're looking at providing something a bit more secure and a bit more solid for the data that survives a bit more long term than, say, those solutions do. Because I would imagine, even though those do have a requirement for data, you're sitting in a slightly different niche perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this whole serverless architecture is something that we got a very close watching brief on. I think, and this is my personal opinion, these new architecture types tend to have a much longer adoption cycle than people think when they're being talked about. So we see the hypervisor having a very, very long cycle still yet, and then the serverless architecture, you know, how quickly it's going to get adopted is going to be interesting to spot. I mean, our focus is persistent storage for any of these architectures, and we're going to look closely at, you know, when to dive in and how aggressively.
Great. I think it's quite refreshing to hear somebody unashamedly storage-centric model.
Yep.
A lot of time people say, we're going to do this, do that, do that. And you see them have a very laser focus on what you do and what you do well.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, it's very easy to chase the fads and chase what the new thing is.
Sure.
You know, I'm disappointed that you haven't said you've got any sort of integration with blockchain, like you already mentioned. Like, well, that's fine. But no, seriously, I do think if you're going to focus on something, you focus on it, and that's what you work on. And that's great. You know, that makes sense.
That's what we're doing. If I could do just a very small advert for the company.
You could, because our time has just got off. So this is your perfect opportunity to finish up with that little advert and tell people where they can find more data.
Well, thank you very much. So British software company, make that clear. StoreMagic's got, you know, in excess of 1,000 customers. You know, we're well established. The product's been in the market for 8 years. And just the listeners should understand this product's deployed into sites with over 2,500 sites, customers over 2,500 sites, but also SMBs with a single site, which are a similar requirement. You know, we are, you know, go to our website, download the trial. Multiple ways you can purchase and consume the product through with the StoreMagic Partner Network.
Wonderful. And just in case people don't know, it is storemagic.com.
It is storemagic.com.
It's not everybody's website is what you expect.
And it's StoreMagic without an E.
Without an E. Where would you put
S-T-O-R.
You? Oh,
I'm
sorry. Yeah. S-T-O-R magic. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's well, that's great, John. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks,
and,
Chris.
Good,
cheers.
Good to meet you. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Martin.
Good to meet you. Cheers. Cheers, John.
And I'll see you later.
Hi, this is Martin and Chris. We're at IP Expo recording another Storage Unpacked. Today we've got Andy Hardy sitting with us. Hi, Andy. Welcome
G'day,
back to the podcast.
Boys, are you good?
So, Andy, for those people who don't know you, can you tell us about who you are and the company and what the company does?
Sure. Well, I'm Andy. I've lived here in Europe for 30 years, despite my silly Australian accent. I've done a number of different things here, IT director for a global bank, investing in storage companies and running storage companies really for the last 30 years.
Which part of Australia are you from?
Sydney.
That's where my son is at the moment.
Is he? I'm going to be out there on Tuesday.
He's out there for a year at Garvan Institute.
What do they do at the
They're
Institute?
They're a medical institute. His name
oh, very
is
good.
Darlinghurst.
Oh, okay. Darlinghurst is a fun part of town.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, there
carry
you go.
On, cool. Carry on, Marcel.
Oh, good.
So Nasuni.
So Nasuni. Nasuni is a cloud-native file system. It's been around for about 10 years. What we're able to do is enable customers to get rid of their on-premise NAS. Their NetApp, their Isilon, their VNX, and the backup and DR that goes with it.
You didn't buzz in.
Oh, sorry, did he do one?
Yeah, he did on-premise.
Oh, no! Can't use on-premise.
Why not?
We get the on-premise police telling us we're wrong. It's on-premises.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Carry on. I'm so sorry.
We'll just pretend we didn't hear.
What is the difference?
Well, on-premise is an assumption. On-premises is a piece of a...
Oh, okay, fair enough. Oh, good.
So, no swearing.
No swearing.
Oh, you've got it
so,
already.
We can let you get rid of your on-premises NAS and the backup and DR system goes with it and move all that into cloud object storage, whether public or private. So we're number one ISV co-sell partner for Microsoft Azure globally, for example. We drive a ton of stuff into AWS, but equally into private cloud storage of all sorts. So the technology enables people to get rid of that NAS that's there, replace it with something which will only have a small amount of local cache disk, and yet it'll seem like it's local still. We suck out that latency problem and protect the data and make it globally accessible.
And I think you're underplaying some of the really advantageous features, like the fact that it gives you now global access to your data. So yep. You can put another NAS somewhere else and still get to that same data.
So I just came off a stage together with one of our customers, Adam Scharf. He's the CIO at TBWA, very big global advertising agency. Yeah. He was explaining that they've got projects which are for clients in China where the local creative teams in Singapore, the account teams in New York, and they want to have all the same view of all the same files for the same project at the same time. So we make that possible. We have very scalable global file locking, that type of thing. And we're doing that for customers with petabytes of storage like those guys. They have 3 petabytes. They have hundreds of sites around the world, and yet it's a transparent single global file system. On the back end, we can support a single cloud or a multi-cloud environment. You might have the object storage in, behind the Chinese firewall, if you like, because sometimes you have to keep the data in China. Part of the same global file system is the stuff that's in New York and Amazon.
So we talk about the cloud ready support. Is it basically almost anything which supports S3?
If it's S3 compatible, we'll pretty much work with it. I mean, we work with people like Cloudian and Scality, for example. I've just done a deal in France today with Scality, for example. We work with people like EMC, ECS. We've done a lot of stuff with IBM Cloud Object Storage. It used to be the CleverSafe technology. So we literally don't care what it is technically. Commercially, we have some important relationships though.
So Mizuni's got a long history of doing this.
Yeah.
So what's new in the world of...
Well, we focused in the last year on the problem of archives. So there's 100 ways to archive data, right? You can get archive storage really cheap. Generally a lot cheaper than your primary storage. But think about it, and this goes back to my days as IT director in one of the world's largest investment banks. You have to come up with some policy that says, what is it that I'm going to take out of my expensive primary file storage system and stuff into my cheaper storage? Let alone the problem of how we're going to find it there, how the user's going to find it, etc. But what am I? Is it going to be PowerPoints with the word fish but not the word dog that are older than last month? Or is it going to be Excel spreadsheets with the number 47 but not the number 5? I mean, I've had to do that with business units on my watch. And, even if you figure out that policy, it changes, the BUs don't get it, etc. So we've worked very hard on this. We were looking at ways to automate the movement of data between primary and archive. We charge a lot less for archive than we do for primary, like everyone else. But then we hit on something, which we started implementing about a year ago, and we've got it in place with a number of customers already. Instead of moving the data, we're just going to move the cost. So we automatically change how much we bill you based on whether the data is primary. For us, we define that very simply. Anything that's been read, written, or changed in the last 12 months. Anything that hasn't, we treat as archive. We just price it differently. So the context here is that all of this stuff, the primary and the archive, is at the back end in cool blob or S3 infrequent access, the cheapest possible object storage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we charge money for the NAS services on top of that, but we charge you a whole lot less for the stuff which hasn't been accessed, read, written, changed.
What does that mean if I'm a customer then? How much would I save typically?
Great question.
Because clearly, you wouldn't want to give stuff away for free, so this must be reason why you're doing this.
The reason we did it is, I'll be really transparent about it. People were choosing to copy stuff out and put it in some third-party location.
So they were having all the... Which defeats the object of your platform in the first place.
Say again?
Which defeats the object of your platform in
Correct.
The first place.
Because by leaving it all in one place, the user is unaffected. The same UNC path, the same F drive, G drive, whatever, it just goes out in the same place. So we thought to ourselves, well, hang on, how can we prevent that? And the challenge is not just for the users, it's for the IT team that then has to figure out, well, how are we going to move it? How people are going to find it, etc. So what we did is we came up with this approach of just modulating that cost based on access time. All we had to add to the product really was some reporting on who's accessed what file when. And then we've worked this through with a few customers already. And it means that the average cost decreases over time. So here's how it works. The amount of stuff which has been accessed in the last year is proportionate to the amount of work going on in the organization. How many staff do you have? How many projects are they running? If I was to say, well, the whole lot of the storage is growing 10%, 20%, whatever it is a year, the total might grow, but the amount being accessed in the last year probably stays around about the same, assuming I got the same number of staff. Now, if I double the number of staff, I'll probably double the cost of that primary storage, but that's very few businesses that are doing that. Maybe you do some M&A, some step change, maybe you get some file size growth, but on the whole, it's the cheaper stuff that grows fast. And when we work this through in practice and we do cost illustrations and so forth, that means that the blended cost per terabyte gets markedly cheaper with every year that passes. So you get a couple of advantages that roll up on each other. We're only charging you per year. The underlying object storage, well, you pay for that as you actually consume it. And AWS, have they dropped their prices twice this year and Azure something the same? So you're always buying the capacity growth at the cheapest current market price.
Right, okay. I was going to say, so if you've done anything to it, so you're talking about archive, so the various object storage public cloud vendors, so you've got things like Glacier, you've got the Nearline, you've got that. So is Nizuni beginning to work out how you might integrate to use for lower price?
No, we are not going to work with the Glacier stuff. So there's about four different tiers of storage if you count the block and the file stuff. But then if you get into the object storage, there's essentially three tiers of object storage you can buy from the usual suspect vendors. There's like hot, if I call it that, using the Microsoft nomenclature. The same stuff in the same racks as the cool.
Yeah.
It's just got a higher headline per terabyte cost than the cool stuff. The cool stuff, however, attracts egress charges. Well, our customers are able to use the cool stuff regardless and use the lower per gigabyte cost because we see 97% of reads coming from our cache.
Okay.
So that's the first trick. What we don't use, though, is that third tier of object storage, the Glacial stuff. Here's why. Part of what we want to do as a NAS, which is globally accessible, is have files instantly available no matter where you are in the world. Now, if we use Glacial storage, the SLA on Glacial storage is hours. It can be 15 hours, for example. So we were just time out waiting for it. You could use it technically, but it wouldn't be smart to do. So we're in the business of leveraging that much cheaper than disk in your own racks in your existing NAS, because you don't have to pay for separate backup copies and the overheads, but using that cool blob storage or AWS IA infrequent access as the or the equivalent from our friends at Cloudian and Scality and EMCCS, the on-premise object storage, which is essentially commodity priced but incredibly robust and globally available.
Cool.
We turn that though into a NAS.
So do you integrate with the other software? So you talk about global file systems globally accessible file systems. So we've got things like replication on buckets and things like that. Or do you do your own replication? Do you require it?
You can replicate the buckets, but we obviate the need to replicate the file data itself.
Yeah.
So when a file gets ingested into Nizuni, we break it down into objects. They're cloud nodes rather than inodes.
Yeah.
Compress them if appropriate, dedupe them if appropriate, always encrypt them so that you maintain GDPR data privacy, blah, stream them off into the cloud. That then goes in multiple directions because that's the way the object storage works, the erasure curve.
Chris is waving the timer.
No, that's the timer.
Believe it or not,
I'm having to stop.
You probably crammed more into that conversation than anybody else has so far.
That's what they pay me for, and that's why my voice is breaking.
Absolutely, but that was fantastic. So that's
really good.
I think that's some really good extra background. I appreciate you coming.
Man, thanks for your time. Good to talk to you again.
Where can people go and find more? Nasuni.com?
Nasuni.com or Stan K18 here at the show. Or just Google Nasuni. The name Nizuni, by the way, it means kind of like NAS
unified.
Unified file system. That's what we patented.
Yeah.
A lot of people think it's a Japanese word. The last thing I'll tell you is that if it was a Japanese word, it would mean baked aubergine. So there.
Wonderful. That could be your new company logo.
And on that note, we'll finish there. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
This is Chris and Martin doing another Storage Impact podcast at IP Expo. And this time we're joined by Michael. Michael, why don't you tell people who you are, what the company is, what you do?
Perfect. Thanks very much for letting me join today. So my name's Michael Queenan. I'm the co-founder of a company called Nephos Technologies. We help organizations transform the way they store, manage, and secure data. What that means fundamentally is we are independent experts around data systems. So we help organizations manage some of the problems that they're seeing with the way data in the market is changing right now.
So when you say data in that sense, I mean, how much of that is just looking at storage products and putting in better storage solutions, or how much of that is really actually architecting a framework or a strategy around data?
So it's the second bit. So it's that framework and strategy. So generally the way that we start when we go in to talk to a customer is the first part we need to do is understand the benchmark of where they are now, but actually fundamentally, where do you want to get to? So in that case of, so how do you currently use your data today and how would you like to use your data in the future?
Okay. So it's not just... Give me an example of that. So, you know, for instance, do you mean how people are using data in databases, whether they're doing things correctly from a compliance perspective, whether they're securing it properly, or is it all of those things?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So so one of the customers we just had actually just had presenting, talking about the Masuni product, which was they came to us and said, we've got about 5 petabytes of data across 170 locations, a ton of duplication, a ton of complexity, a ton of management and problems. How do we solve those? And we literally took it from the strategy upwards. And we're like, okay, what would you like to do? What's your workflow? So understand their business process first. Okay. So it's actually, well, what they do is they have a workflow of certain sites create data, then they want to be able to share it to other sites to be able to edit that content. They want to be able to do that to progress that through. So actually what they were looking for is a global namespace, a global file system with some element of workflow management in that. And then they wanted to reduce the overall cost of their storage because they had so much duplication and so many different technologies. They wanted to standardize across one technology, but then utilize a centralized pool of storage in their eyes.
Does that mean you work with them to look at replacing a particular product? So imagine, so I've done something similar before in another job. And I've looked at it more from a storage perspective where we've gone in, we've done an RFP, we've replaced the technology, we've saved money from that perspective. You know, are you doing that as well? Because obviously, that was how we generated our savings and our, you know, and justified ourselves being in there was we saved millions in terms of the hardware cost. Are you doing something similar?
Yeah, absolutely. So we initially started off as consultancy only, and then we started doing consultancy and architectural design, and then we kind of moved from consultancy to architectural design to actually deploying the solution for the customer. And that specific customer we're talking about saved $18 million over 5 years based on the solutions that we deployed. And that was the key element to it. So it was helping introduce potentially different ways and different technologies of the way they're working now, but then also showing what that total cost of ownership and the ROI would be for deploying those types of technologies and then deploying it for them.
Got you. So how do you stay independent?
Constantly evaluating the market. Okay. So our thing is one of the things we talk about, which is a bit cliche, but trying to do the thousands of hours of research that our customers don't have to, because there's so many different new technologies out there all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so many different technologies that are doing the same thing in a slightly different way or a slightly different thing in the same way. So constantly evaluating the market. So we do a lot of internal POCs. We do a lot of going over to Silicon Valley to see new technologies. We're frequently one of the first partners of something in the UK or in Europe to get that understanding of how is the market moving forward. And what is that not quite bleeding edge, but leading edge type technologies? And we're generally one of those elements where we're introducing new technologies that maybe companies in the UK have never heard of, where we're having to explain to them what's the differences between the way they do it now, why the benefits, why would you take that risk of moving from a perfectly safe environment, perfectly safe vendor, to maybe a vendor you've never heard of before.
So I was going to say, so you do all this research, you look at it, so you're at the show today. So who's hot? What's hot?
So funnily enough, a lot of the stuff that we're looking at, you've featured fairly recently. So we like Egazio.
Hey, hold on a second. Are you saying you listen to us?
I do listen to you. I was actually saying that I just did an 18-hour road trip down to the south of France with my wife and my little one.
Oh, God.
When my wife fell asleep, I stuck the podcast on.
She didn't have to suffer it then.
So we work with Weka. Okay. I think Weka is a phenomenal technology that's going to hugely grow in the UK market. We're starting to now do work with Egazio, which I think is going to be a phenomenal technology as well, which is a data management, data analysis platform. But one of their key elements it does is it does batch and real-time streaming at the same time. So the ability to combine multiple different data sets and give that single view, I think is going to be hugely powerful because there's not many people that do that right now.
I think they got their name by picking a handful of letters out of a Scrabble bag. Because how on earth would you come up with a name like that?
How on earth do you pronounce it?
It's something to do with... waterfalls, though, I think.
Yeah, it is on their website.
There is something that actually the name comes from.
But those two technologies specifically, we're seeing a huge amount of traction with recently. Okay. And obviously, I mean, things that we previously looked at, I think Masuni's going to be massive, but then we've worked with Masuni for a few years. Rubrik is, again, still growing, but that's kind of a much more mature product now. But the Weka stuff and the Egazio stuff, I think, are two that are going to come to the marketplace fairly aggressively.
I was going to say, you mentioned names. We were just talking about before you came on about your name. Where does it come from? Because it says Nephos, sounds like it should be a goth band.
So So when we're looking at starting a business,
but it literally means something. It's cloud.
It does. It does mean cloud.
Cloud in Greek.
It is cloud in Greek.
There
we go. Yeah, it's ancient Greek for cloud. So when we're trying to start the business, the first thing we were looking at was obviously cloud technologies, and trying to find something that had cloud in it back 5-6 years ago, everything was taken. So I started looking at ancient Greek, ancient Roman, ancient Sumerian, like anything that I could find a word that meant something that had something else about it.
Excellent. That's good. We've learned something today.
Absolutely.
Well,
yes, I knew that.
Well, you're just too clever for me. You're just good at your languages.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry. So what do you think the biggest challenge for customers is today in this market? I mean, you've talked about the fact that the companies that are managing large volumes of data and analysing it clearly are where you're seeing the most interest. But, you know, we're looking around this theatre and we are seeing signs that talk about IoT.
Yep.
Let's ignore blockchain because that really isn't a storage solution or anything.
Well, let's just ignore blockchain.
Let's just, yeah. Let's just
the rest of the market is us.
Yeah, and, you know, but there's other things. There's obviously the modern storage, which is where as soon you've come into the but what is it that customers are trying to fix as their biggest problem today?
I think there's the most conversations we have, I think there's three. I think there's one is the sheer volume of data they have to store or is being created in an IoT environment. And I think you're seeing much more broad companies now creating large volumes of data. So historically it would be those content creators, but now actually you've got manufacturing firms that have got sensors and everything.
Yeah.
So whereas before they might not have had as much data, they now have more. So I think you're seeing companies, just the volume of data they've got and the volume of data they're creating is expanding. So they're going, we can't keep doing what we're doing. Something has to change because we can't afford to keep doing it that way.
Okay.
I think there's the second bit, which is people are now using data much differently. And also we're hearing more about, we don't know how we want to use it, but we want to be able to use it in multiple ways. Whereas historically it would be like, we've got files, they sit on a file server, people access them, great. But now we're like, well, we want to see those files from 10 years ago, and we want to be able to combine that with files from 30 seconds ago, and we want to be able to have upstream, downstream services that we sell, and an environment that enables us to do all of that. And then the last bit, I think, is the security of the data. So again, I think historically, data was quite nice and safe. It sat in your data center, you could stick your arms around it, it was nice. Whereas now, there's just as much data in the cloud as there is on site, and it's how do I blend that security to be able to have a centralized security data profile wherever that data may reside.
So say, do you think, mate, you're talking about this blending security profiles? I'm a big advocate for public cloud, and with security comes up an awful lot. My general comment to a lot of people, if you really want to make your private data center if you want to make your public cloud as insecure as your private data center, go ahead. But most times, public cloud is a lot more secure than people think. It's an emotional reaction.
Yes.
Do you find a lot of that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, so when I'm talking about data security, weirdly, we talk more about the SaaS market of data security.
Yeah.
So like your Box, your Dropbox, your Salesforce,
that
part of it to me. But yeah, I totally agree. I think that because it's outside of your own data center, because it's outside, it's somebody else's control, there is this emotional attachment that if I can't physically go and see my data, it must be less secure.
Yeah.
And that is a hurdle that people just have to get over.
One of the areas I think we haven't really sorted yet is definitely IoT and security and data. And just how we keep it consistent. You know, so if data gets created at the edge, and you want to bring it in your processes, how do you know that the copy you copied in, if you're copying, is the same copy that you've got in already in the core? That distributed nature, I think, is not really 100% solved yet.
No, I agree. And I think that if you look at the way that we've now sort of solved with companies like Insigni, we've now sort of solved that distributed unstructured data, the distributed file basis. I agree. I think that next step is, in Egrazio as an example, I've brought out their Edge. They have an Edge appliance, which has a caching type solution where you can do a lot of the machine learning AI locally to the Edge, and then it syncs with the core. So you can either set policies and controls in the core and run stuff in the core, but you can also have autonomous AI machine learning at the Edge. So I agree. I think that blend of the ability to do some impact and some analysis at the Edge is absolutely important, and how you blend those two models together.
Okay, sounds good. So our timer's about to go off, and our timer tells us that that's our 10 minutes. So where can people follow up with you as a company, or even you personally online?
Yep, so we're obviously on the web, www.nephostechnologies.com. We're going to be at Big Data London in November. So we've got a stand there, so if people want to come and look us up there, we're either on the website there, bigdataldn.com, and we'll be there as well.
Brilliant, okay. Cool. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much for your time.
Cool.
Cheers, thanks.